Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The Gone Cold podcast may contain violent or graphic subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
The diligence and determination in which Garland, Texas, locals searched for 8-year-old Kem Nguyen after he vanished on the morning of July 18, 1993, kept the boy's family from sinking into a hopeless darkness, if only just barely. A week after Kem went missing, some folks were still putting in 14-hour days to find him. Many wore a t-shirt bearing his photograph and the phone number for the Garland Police Department, of which about 350 were handed out by Vietnamese community leaders. On Sunday, July 25th, 7 days since Kim was last seen, the Garland Police Command Post was no longer in operation, but policeman Steve Frazier had been assigned as coordinator of the continued search efforts. Though it now consisted only of volunteers, as the cops concentrated on investigating tips and carefully patrolling the area, officers were instructed to respond immediately to any call having to do with the Kem Nguyen case. While Nguyen family neighbors combed through areas where they hoped to find the 8-year-old hiding, each volunteer breathed in deeply and held it as they turned over large items like discarded sheets of plywood, or as they came upon something in the tall brush that didn't belong. Each time they breathed out quickly and heavily when they discovered they had not come across the boy's body. Everyone wanted to find Kem Nguyen. They just didn't want to find him dead. Garland Police Commander Bob Cortez told reporters that the case had them baffled. They were at a standstill, Cortez said, until searchers found a clue or new information came to light. There was one clue found earlier in the searches, Kem Nguyen's blue and brown striped shirt. It was discovered by a person who had taken it upon themselves to search outside the approximate 2-mile perimeter surrounding the Nguyen home 3 days after the efforts began. Volunteers and police found no other clues in the area the shirt had been found, which was near a Garland power and light generating plant on East Walnut Street. Though it had no bloodstains or tears, the discovery of Kim's shirt seemed like evidence of foul play. He'd been known to disrobe at inappropriate times, but even the director of pediatric behavior at Children's Medical Center in Dallas doubted Kim, who was autistic, would wander off so far and so aimlessly. Even the FBI, who said they were investigating a lead out of state they'd come across, had no idea where Kim was or what happened to him. The shirt, anyway, at least so far as the public knew, was the single clue or piece of evidence that had been discovered since the beginning. But the cops had been holding something back, a specific and distinct witness report that, perhaps, could have led somewhere the very first day of the searches had it been released. On Thursday, July 29, 1993, an article in the Dallas Morning News shocked North Texans who'd been keeping up with Kem Nguyen's case. just hours after searches for the boy began 11 days earlier. An unidentified neighbor of the Nguyen's came to police with an important recollection. While driving down Castle Drive that morning, this woman passed Thornhill Lane, where she saw Kim near the stop sign at the end of the street, about 100 yards away from the Nguyen home. He was flapping his arms as if he was flying like a bird, the witness told police. As she passed, she noticed another vehicle driving slowly past Kim. When the witness looked in her rearview mirror after passing the boy, she saw the car slow down even more. The vehicle then turned around, going back toward him. The witness described this vehicle as a white Chevy Blazer. Although she was apparently unable to give a model year range, she told the cops other details that were seemingly distinct. The Blazer had 2-inch wide silver stripes running down its sides, a chrome ball trailer hitch, and dark tinted windows. As she reported what she'd seen, the witness was distraught, almost inconsolable. Had she done something, she told the missing boy's father, Rudy Nguyen, perhaps Kim could have been saved. When the Garland police finally made this information public via news sources like the Dallas Morning News and WFAA-TV, they said they had no reason to suspect the driver was involved necessarily. They only wanted to question them. It wasn't hard to read between those lines. Those who had volunteered so much of their time trying to find Kim didn't understand why the police held back the information. Surely, they thought, the public's help identifying the vehicle could have hastened its discovery at the get-go. Still, the cops defended their lack of disclosure the only way they really could, by calling it an investigative lead that they wanted to exhaust before asking the public's help. Not long after the Chevy Blazer description's release, Garland Police Chief Terry Hensley said officers and detectives were put to work checking out the 35 to 40 responses the department had received. The very same day the report of this vehicle hit the pages of the Dallas Morning News, an unthinkable discovery was made many miles away in a neighboring city. At 6:20 p.m., about 11 miles due south of the home of the Nguyen family and a mile southwest of Town East Mall in Mesquite, two teenagers were walking through a vacant lot near the intersection of U.S. Highway 80 and the Lyndon B. Johnson Freeway, or Interstate 635. The lot sat at a paved dead-end road accessed by vehicle from the Interstate 635 service road. The lot was unkempt, the Johnson grass there reaching 3.5 to 4 feet tall in some areas, and was surrounded by woods. Not far away from a drainage ditch, the teenagers caught a glimpse of something out of place in their peripheral and decided to take a look. They were shocked to find the unclothed, badly decomposed body of a child. The boys rushed to an unknown nearby business and called 911 about the terrifying discovery. Within minutes, the scene was swarming with Dallas County Sheriff's deputies and Mesquite PD. Not long after that, as rubbernecking passersby bottlenecked the 635 access road as well as the interstate itself, detectives from Garland arrived. Word had spread so quickly, in fact, that many in the traffic jams knew exactly what was happening and had come specifically to watch. Though the body was at a point of decomposition that made it impossible for detectives to immediately determine the sex of the deceased child, Garland police recognized enough. The body, they were positive, belonged to the missing boy they and volunteers had been seeking for 11 days. It was the body of 8-year-old Kim Nguyen. At 8 p.m. on the night of Thursday, July 29, 1993, Rudy and Sarah Nguyen were asked to come to the Garland Police Station. They brought their children, Michael and Janmi. Officers broke the news as gently as they could. But, of course, there was nothing that could stop the anguish the nightmare had wrought. Literally. From this point forward, Rudy Nguyen was haunted, and sometimes completely paralyzed, by nightmares about his son. After returning home, Rudy and Sarah allowed some volunteers, who had shown the family so much love and support, to join them in their backyard. Reporters, too, came. Though they were in unimaginable pain, the Nguyens wanted everyone to remember Kim.
"I just want to live my life to help people like him,"
Rudy Nguyen said as he held his son Michael close. Both had swollen red eyes and wet cheeks. Rudy also took the opportunity to speak directly to Kim's killer.
"He did nothing wrong. I swear I won't try to take revenge on anyone. I just want to know why and what happened."
The boy's mother, Sarah, tried to keep busy as she wept, but spoke to volunteers as she held tightly to her chest a photo of Kim.
"He was a helpless little boy,"
Sarah said,
"but he knew how to love me."
Searchers were also stricken by grief, overwhelming sadness, excruciating hopelessness, intense anger. The feelings continued the following day. Police officers wanted to get their hands on the monster responsible. Garland Mayor Bob Smith declared that whoever murdered the boy would pay. "They messed with the wrong city," he said. As the Nguyens awaited the results of the autopsy, Rudy graciously thanked everyone who helped look for Kim.
"Anything I say is not good enough. What they have done for me, I'll never forget it for the rest of my life."
One cruel chapter was over, but the next has never ended.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky?
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Although they'd been steadfast in the media that Kim Nguyen's case was being investigated as a missing persons case prior to the discovery of his body, the Garland police likely always believed they were dealing with a homicide. Finding the boy's body 11 miles away from home solidified that belief.
"We're certain there was foul play because he couldn't have walked this far without someone seeing him,"
Garland police spokesperson Officer Larry Rollins told the Dallas Morning News. Chief Terry Hensley would later add that it was unrealistic to believe Kim would have or could have walked almost a dozen miles unclothed.
"He had to get there some way,"
he said after confirming the department would now investigate the case as a homicide. Detectives at the scene remarked that Kim's body was so badly decomposed, they couldn't even tell if he had any bruises, and the several medical examiners who had a hand in the autopsy the following day didn't fare much better. First thing in the morning on Friday, July 30th, 1993, Dallas County Chief Medical Examiner Dr. Jeffrey Barnard performed an autopsy on the body of 8-year-old Kim Nguyen, alongside others, at the Southwestern Institute of Forensic Sciences. During the process, which took a couple days, the body was officially identified using dental records. There were no internal organs present in Kim's mummified body, the public version of the findings notes. No doubt a result of the hot, dry conditions of the North Texas summer. While it was considered unlikely almost to the point of certainty, pathologists had to rule out that Kim somehow walked the 11 miles to Mesquite. In Texas, temperatures in July reached the point that walking on concrete or pavement, i.e. roads and sidewalks, will cause severe burns to bare feet. Kim was wearing no shoes. The soles of Kim's feet showed no injuries. There were no nicks or fractures on Kim's skeleton, meaning that if he'd been shot or stabbed, the death instrument missed his bones, which is not necessarily uncommon. But this could have ruled out the scenario that someone had accidentally hit him with their car and then covered up their negligence by placing Kim in the vacant lot. No neck organs remained, meaning determining a cause of death, such as strangulation, was impossible. This method of homicide, however, seemed highly probable in Kim's case. Although his hyoid bone wasn't broken, the killer could have used a ligature. And it's also important to point out, according to an article on Children's Healthcare of Atlanta's website, the bones of children are considerably more flexible than those of an adult. The hyoid bone, particularly, could have easily bowed during manual strangulation, as opposed to snapping or fracturing. When the toxicology report came back sometime later, only a small volume of naturally occurring ethanol was found in the boy's system. In their final determination, the Dallas County Medical Examiner's Office ruled Kim's death as homicidal violence, though the determination appears to have been made because of the nature of his disappearance and where he was found. In contradiction to this narrative, a man who was handling press duties for the Medical Examiner's Office said that despite the condition of the boy's body, pathologists would be able to determine a cause of death. If they ever did, that information has never been released. At Williams Chapel in Garland, Texas, on Monday, August 2nd, 1993, 100 or so folks packed into the small building to memorialize Kim Nguyen and give their continued support to the Nguyen family. Mourners arrived to hear the theme song from the Pink Panther cartoon, the 8-year-old's favorite. Local police chaplain Ken Ashlock eulogized the slain child as friends, relatives, neighbors, and search volunteers wept. After the graveside service, it was clear residents' anger had not waned. One volunteer vowed that they would hunt for Kim's killer as intensely as they had looked for him. Meanwhile, the Garland police reported that they had neither suspects nor a motive, and refused to say whether they found any evidence at the scene. When specifically asked by a reporter if there were tire tracks or footprints anywhere nearby, Chief Terry Hensley answered,
"No comment."
The cops had kept some information close to the chest before the discovery of Kim's body. The Chevy Blazer witnessed driving slowly by the boy, arguably a terrible mistake on their part. If they found anything after searching the scene around Kim's body as they led trained dogs through the waist-high grass is anyone's guess. If there was ever a time in the investigation to keep mum, this was it. And after calling on the public to come forward, that's exactly what the Garland police did.
"There's someone out there that has noticed a person they know acting strangely since Kim disappeared,"
Chief Hensley said at a press conference.
"People don't do this kind of thing without other people knowing it."
The press, too, went silent. Coverage of Kim Nguyen's case abruptly stopped, Besides spots in the Dallas Morning News on August 12th, announcing a $1,000 Crime Stoppers reward for information leading to the arrest and indictment of a suspect. And then again on the 28th, announcing that Crime Stoppers and the Garland Police had raised the reward to $10,000. In downtown Dallas, in the first few days of September 1993, a three-day seminar on crimes against children was held for doctors, social workers, prosecutors, and law enforcement. There, authorities and experts spoke about the realities of child abuse, abduction, and murder, among other topics. Dallas policeman Lieutenant Bill Walsh said that it was much more common for children to be killed by someone close to them than a stranger and opportunist. For the rarer instances where the latter is the case, crimes such as the murder of Kim Nguyen, likely, law enforcement experts had developed a profile of probable perpetrators. Director of Case Management for the National Center of Missing and Exploited Children, Bill Ermini, described these profiles, which he called necessarily vague, but nonetheless helpful to police. Child molesters who prey on kids they know either marry to get close to their victims, Ermini said, or tend to live alone or with their parents. They are generally sexually abused themselves. These types, who Ermini labeled pedophiles, move around a lot, usually collect pornography, and spend little time around folks their own age. Ermini called the second type of sexual abuser situational child molesters. They are much more likely to murder their victims, who they do not know, are social misfits, sexually inexperienced, and, Ermini said, sometimes prefer detective magazines to pornography. Publications that usually featured scantily clad women in the process of being murdered by a man on the cover. The pages on the inside filled with sensationalized and exploitative material. Presumably, Ermini meant they used these detective magazines for arousal purposes. The seminar, which was the fifth annual gathering of its kind, lasted from September 2nd to the 4th. Although Lieutenant Walsh told the Dallas Morning News that stranger abductions weren't a primary point of discussion there due to their rarity, something happened just a few miles north on the seminar's last day that, along with Kim Nguyen's kidnapping and murder a month and a half before, seemingly contradicted the policeman's comment. 7-year-old Ashley Nicole Estelle was abducted from a park in Plano. As he repaired watches and clocks for customers, Rudy Nguyen's eyes were glued to the screen of a small television that sat directly in front of his workspace. The abduction of Ashley Estelle, tragically found to be a murder the following day, consumed Rudy, especially when, 10 days later, a 23-year-old convicted child molester named Michael Nawi Blair was arrested and charged with her murder. Garland police detectives working his son's case were immediately interested in the man as well. Ultimately, they could find no evidence that Blair was involved in Kim's murder, but there were still reasons to suspect him, perhaps. When Blair opened up about his past crimes, most of which he would never be held accountable for, it came to light that, although he preferred to rape little girls, he also raped little boys. After he was convicted of Ashley's murder, according to D Magazine's Jacques Hilburn, Michael Blair was, quote, particularly interested in the specifics of Kim Nguyen, end quote. In his article titled Did This Creep Really Kill Ashley Estelle, Hilburn said Blair admitted to driving near the scene where Kim's body was found, just as he was observed doing in Ashley's case. Interestingly, on the day Kim's body was found, police in Mesquite had to arrest a man who had refused to move his car from the Interstate 635 access road. The man, whose name was never released, had stopped to watch the investigation. This situation is eerily similar to how Blair first came upon the radar of police for the murder of Ashley Estelle. When Blair was arrested for her murder, Rudy Nguyen hoped authorities also had the guy who killed his son. But again, there was nothing linking Michael Nawi Blair to the murder of Kim Nguyen. Months after Kim's murder, the Garland police had a metal sign erected at the corner of Thornhill Lane, where the street meets Castle Drive. The sign, bright red print on white and bolted to a 75-pound pole set in concrete, read, "On 7/18/93, Kim Nguyen was abducted from this location and murdered. If you have any information on this offense, please call 205-2086. 11 miles away, not far from where Kim's body was found, a similar sign was put in place by the Texas Transportation Department at the request of Garland police. In December of 1993, both signs disappeared. Detective Joe McDonald of Garland theorized that the sign on Castle Drive and Thornhill Lane was taken down by someone in the neighborhood trying to sell their house. The theory, based seemingly upon the detective hearing that several houses in the area were up for sale, did not explain why the sign in Mesquite was gone. The vacant, unkempt lot there where it once stood was hardly affected by its presence. McDonald, it should be noted, had been the sole policeman working Kim's case for months. The detective also thought that perhaps a resident who couldn't stand to think about the crime every day when they drove by it took it down. Rudy Nguyen, however, believed that Kim's killer took the signs, perhaps macabre trophies taken by the twisted individual capable of killing a child, or perhaps whoever murdered him frequently drove by the areas and felt remorse when he saw them. Whatever the case, authorities decided not to replace them, since, they said, the signs had run the course of their usefulness. The following July, as the anniversary of Kim's death neared, the Nguyen family still mourned as if the murder had occurred yesterday. And the cops weren't any closer to finding the boy's killer than they were while taking the missing persons report. No suspects, no motive, no leads. Since Kim didn't speak, it was hard for Rudy Nguyen to understand why someone had to kill his son. He wouldn't be able to tell, let alone provide a description, Rudy said. Kim's mother Sarah was stuck in a perpetual cycle of sadness, followed by anger. And then came another long period of silence in the press. In January of 1996, when 9-year-old Amber Hagerman was kidnapped and killed in nearby Arlington, the Nguyens were forced to relive the tragedy of the abduction and murder of their son. Then, more than a year later, during the 4-year anniversary month of Kim's death, another tragedy occurred. On Sunday, July 6, 1997, Rudy Nguyen left work early and locked himself inside his room. Since Independence Day, when a 7-year-old boy disappeared while riding his bike around his father's apartment complex in far north Dallas, Rudy's nightmares had returned. In them, he sees his boy in a field. Kim, his face half eaten by insects, says to his father,
"They left me there. I died."
When he learned that Sunday that searchers had found the missing boy, Jonathan Harrison, deceased, Rudy Nguyen broke. Even though the cops said the death appeared an accident, Rudy couldn't help but think of Kim. Grief bubbled back up to the surface, and it could no longer be partially staved off by keeping busy. It was debilitating. Until a ruling was official, the fear that another child murderer had done his worst, or maybe the same child murderer had done it again, paralyzed Rudy. After all, his son's killer was most likely still out there on the loose, somewhere. On another day, Rudy might have locked himself in Kim's room instead of his own. He often did, as he replayed the disappearance, searches, and ultimately the discovery of Kim's body over and over again in his head. But after 7-year-old Jonathan Harrison's death, being surrounded by Kim's things was too much to bear. Kim's case remains unsolved today, and because it hasn't been reported on by traditional news sources for decades now, it's unclear if the Garland police have revisited the case since the initial investigation. In the case of 7-year-old Jonathan Harrison, it was determined that he had indeed died as the result of a terrible accident. When he disappeared, Jonathan became the first child to trigger the Amber Plan, which required police to coordinate with local television and radio broadcasters to alert the public when a child went missing. The plan, which has changed some and is now known as the Amber Alert, was inspired by several relatively high-profile crimes in the Dallas-Fort Worth-Arlington areas, including Kim Nguyen's and Ashley Estelle's. But it was set in motion after the abduction and murder of Amber Hagerman, who it is named after. Next time on Gone Cold, Amber's story. If you have any information about the 1993 kidnapping and murder of 8-year-old Kim Nguyen, please call the Garland Police at 972-485-4840. If you have not already, look for Gone Cold on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter by searching Gone Cold and looking for the Texas logo. If you'd like to support the show and get the episodes ad-free, go to patreon.com/gonecoldpodcast. Thanks to all of you who support us there. It's a huge deal to us. If you're not in a position to help Gone Cold financially, but would like to in some other way, well, I've got just the thing. Leaving us a 5-star rating and written review on iTunes particularly helps Gone Cold's visibility. The more folks who find us and listen, the greater chance someone with information about a case hears the show and comes forward with what they know. Every little bit helps, and we appreciate y'all's support immensely, however you choose to give it. Sources for this episode can be found in the episode's show notes. Thanks for listening, y'all.